둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
We've got really good vibes going on in terms of our backgrounds.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Yeah, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button if you're not already. I do three new interviews every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists. Discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, or YouTube for the video versions. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, one of my favorite actors in the game, Kate Siegel. We're going to be talking about a lot. She starred in the new Time Traveler's Wife on HBO Max. She starred in Midnight Mass. In fact, she is married to Mike Flanagan and has been in just about every one of his movies, I think. The Haunting of Hill House, Hush, which she co-wrote the screenplay on that one, Gerald's Game. Haunting a Blind Manor, so much more. She's amazing at her work, and we got to talk about all of this. In fact, we also got to talk about a little bit of the upcoming one, The Fall in the House of Usher. Within the interview, though, the themes of death and mortality that carry through so many of her roles, how having children changes your outlook on life. That iconic scream from the boat in Midnight Mass, and also that work-life relationship she has with husband Mike Flanagan. We're also going to talk plenty about her musical tastes as well, from growing up on a heavy dose of Fiona Apple, Ani DeFranco, Alanis Morissette, using Cardi B and Jennifer Hudson as warm-up music for The Time Traveler's Wife, and folks like Leonard Cohen, Ben Folds, BTS in her Midnight Mass playlist. She'll also reveal which Paul Simon classic would be her Vecna song, and which Doja Cat track is her character's number one go-to song in that upcoming Fall in the House of Usher. So let's get into this. It's Kyle Meredith with Kate Siegel.
Hey, how's it going?
What you've been doing the past few years, from The Haunting of Hill House, and I could just go through all of them, of course. Lately, with Midnight Mass last year, The Astronaut's Wife, I've been become such an admirer of the scripts that you're part of, the work that you're doing, what you can do with a close-up and the lines, how you deliver it. You are incredible at your craft, and I just want to throw all the compliments to you right away.
Thank you so much. I spent most of my morning with my three-year-old daughter yelling. She was yelling at me, "You make my heart sad." So having compliments is going to balance out those scales for me, and I appreciate that.
What a line. You make my heart sad.
You make my, mommy, you make my heart sad. And I try to do this kind of quasi gentle parenting thing. And I repeat it back to her. I go, "I make your heart sad." And she goes, "Yeah."
Yeah, that didn't work that time.
Like in the Flanagan household. So to hear that I'm good at my job is very, very helpful to me.
I mean that. And well, let's just start. You know, so recently it was The Time Traveler's Wife, the book that became a movie that's become a show. And you, of course, you play the mom of our time traveler.
Yeah.
And I do also want to say, you know, here we have, you know, there's a love story. There's meditations on death. There's time traveling. So there's some science fiction involved. It's not a horror show. And yet you are still involved with a very bloody death somehow. Like, is it a magnet that you're drawn to, or are they drawn to you?
I think very early on in my like acting training, I had a teacher tell me once to learn how to cry beautifully. Like, now that's kind of like some bullshit and whatever, but that, you know, it seems that like people hire me to either fall in love or die terribly. Like, that's what I do. That's it. Like, you're looking for someone to die, like, tragically, you're going to get Kate Siegel on the speed dial. One of these days I'll get to, like, you know, solve a murder or something. I guess it's still murder. God, maybe this is it. Like, I have a compass that always points to murder.
You play it well, for what it's worth. This was fun, you know, and again, I've still not read the book. The movie I did see a few years ago, and there was a point I was watching it alone and I didn't know that I was going to watch it that day. It just kind of fell into it. My wife was on her way home and she walks in at the end and I was just bawling, just like, and we were early on dating too. So this is one of the first times, like, you know, it's so I was really interested in how this story was going to be told this time around. And it was done with such grace, especially over a long, you know, over episodic period, how you did it. But plus, I also love time traveling. I'm just a nut for it.
Very cool thing, right?
Yeah. What drew you to it? Was it something about that? Like, what was it about this that you wanted to be a part of the story?
I was a huge fan of the book years ago. And I would often like bemoan the fact that it was made into a movie before I was in the like professional acting world. And I was like, oh, well, that one's always gone. But I'm like you, I love the combination of romance and time travel and sci-fi. And the way that the author, Audrey's last name, I'm going to murder, Nerfinger.
Sure. I believe you.
Oh, man. Somebody drop that in the comments, please. I feel bad. The way that she blends it all together really is exceptional. And then Stephen Moffat, obviously. Stephen Moffat, I've been a Whovian for like a long time. Behind me is a ton of Doctor Who stuff as well. And so it was a dream of mine to speak the words that Stephen Moffat wrote. And so the combination of those two things, it was very much like a moth to flame. I couldn't have...
Steve, you're right. Everything he's done so far, and has some good experience with time travel himself.
Yeah, he does. He gets it.
Stephen Moffat. There are those lines, though. That's all through here. The thing that I took away from the series more than I ever did the movie, because with the movie, I think I was stuck on the time traveling. I was stuck on the love story and, oh, what's happened to him? You know, he's going to die. But with this one, I guess because there was more time spent, there was that, as I said, a meditation on mortality quite a bit more. When the line was delivered, it's always later than you think, and this is the only time you ever get. Again, there I was, just like, that's that, those. But like, was it in the conversation that this was going to be so much more of a focus for you all? With like more of like mortality than just the love. It's absolutely not just a love story.
Yeah, there was some. So there's this idea. Annette, who was the name of the character I play in Time Traveler's Wife, she doesn't really exist in the movie, and she's kind of an afterthought in the book. So she's an entire creation made fresh in Stephen Moffat's mind, and as told through David Nutter, the director. And what we talked about a lot is how memories are like time travel too. You could be walking down a street that the last time you walked down was 10 years ago, and all of a sudden you're 10 years younger, remembering the first time you saw your husband walking towards you. And so this kind of sense of mortality is what makes time travel possible, right? The fact that it's going to end makes every moment kind of stick to your brain a little bit better. It's that memento mori thing. And so when we were discussing who Annette was in the story and how it felt, it's this idea that she is such a powerful force in Henry's life that when she dies so suddenly, so unexpectedly, so traumatically, it kind of leaves a black hole in his life. And he keeps getting sucked back into it. Like, he can't escape it. And so more than we were focused on her mortality or her death, we were focused on making her so full of life. like so completely fill up a space. Even her proposal, which is could have been just like this kind of skipped through montage scene, we wanted it to bubble and sparkle so that this character that you don't see so much of makes a huge impact. So you understand why Henry can't let it go physically or emotionally.
And then, but seeing, I guess, let me do a little comparison there too, because, you know, again, last year, Midnight Mass comes out. What a masterpiece of a show there. And here we are again, similar themes. There's the dealing with the mortality. Do you find, you know, as you're coming at this from Kate's side, not the character's side, that you're working through something as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think as a mom of two young kids, it's the first step you take in your life towards your own death, like towards your legacy. So there's this idea that you're your own individual person walking around in the world. And then at some point you go, I think I want to make a littler version of my DNA. And then it starts to experience things and you realize that you have started the clock, right? Because as it grows up, as the child grows, you are fading away. And this is a choice you're making and something you confront over and over again, because they're having these firsts and you're like, oh, I may have a handful of firsts left, but mostly I have lasts left. Like the last time I pick up my daughter, the last time she needs to fall asleep in my arms. I have a lot of lasts left and she has mostly firsts left. And in these moments, I feel like Aaron at the end. I remind myself that I'm a drop of the water returning to the ocean, that it's all us. Like it's me, I'm my daughter, my daughter's me, I am you, you, and we're so connected that I don't think there's any way for me to play the characters I play if I don't think the thoughts that they're thinking and try to relate it to my life, because that's my job, right? I take these insane circumstances. My throat has been ripped open by a vampire angel and I'm dying in a great, like who's gonna look at that and go, I don't know if that's how that goes. Right. But what I need to do is take that completely insane moment and filter it through extremely personal, specific point of view to make it relatable. So that on some level you go, yeah, I believe that. I believe it. And so like good acting is when the actor can feel the emotion themselves. And great acting is when I make you feel an emotion. That's the magic.
Because even like, you know, the monologue that, you know, I know we talk about a lot, you know, what happens when we die. It's not just entertainment. It's useful. Like it's helpful.
It's so useful. I was watching Contact the other day, which is my favorite movie of all time. And in it, Jodie Foster goes and she like sees her dead dad with the alien. Spoiler alert. It's a movie from the 90s. Like I can't, come on people. Catch up. But at one point the dad picks up all the sand, right? And in the sand glitters stars on his palm. And I turn to Mike and I go, there are more universes in the thing than grains of sand in the thing. And he was like, yeah, that's right here. And I was like, oh, every day.
It's always there. But it's true. I mean, all you said, like, I have a son who starts high school next week, in a week and a half. Oh. And I think about those, you're like, there was a line, I feel like I'm probably pulling it from another movie or somewhere, a song, I don't know, but it says, it's basically like, because once we become parents, we become memories. We're here to be memories, yeah. You know?
Yes.
That's the whole thing. And yeah. Anyway, ooh. That's what I'm taking through a lot of your work right there. That's what it's speaking to me. So that's not a question. That's just another compliment.
I hope it brings you healing and I hope it brings you a sense of joy.
Every bit of it too. Further on, I couldn't bring up Midnight Mass. The scream is one of the greatest screams, I think, in history. In the boat. To be present in a moment like that, to have to deliver that, not just a line, but this guttural emotional thing. Like, is there a place, is there reserve that you still are able to turn to for that kind of a thing? Like, what is that?
There's a couple of things. For that one in specific, we were in like deep pandemic, right? And so everyone was terrified and everyone was unsure and we didn't know if the world was over and we didn't know what was going on. And I think I was tapping into that sense of screaming into the abyss. Like, what the fuck is it? Ooh, am I allowed to curse?
You are. Cuss is all you want.
Great. I was like, what the fuck is this world? What is happening? And then I did a ton of research about how long it would take a human body to burn in that way and what it would smell like and the different stages of that. And I like did a little bit of like getting the pictures, like getting some visuals for myself. And then I just gave myself the freedom to go there and like see if it, what it is in those moments is you have to be kind of unafraid to embarrass yourself. Cause I was like, I'm going to try something. And this is the first day of shooting. Like, no, this is day one of Midnight Mass. We're in this boat, which is not in the ocean. It is on like two apple boxes surrounded by green screen. I've never met Zach before. Like we did a chemistry read and this is the first day we're working together and we're doing the entire boat scene. And so at a certain point, I just had to say to him and to Michael Fimignari and Mike Flanagan, who knows me, I was like, I'm going to try something. I'm going to scream excessively long. And I'm just going to keep going until I wanted that feeling of she was still screaming, but there was no more sound left. Because it takes so long for a body to burn. It takes so long. And it smells so confusing. Like there's like,
that's a word for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like pork a little bit, like bacon. And then it's like the burning hair. And then his shoes would smell different when they burn the rubber. And just even thinking about it, it feels like I want to scream again.
Yeah.
Because it's insanity. And then the insanity of the fact that the story he told me is the truth. And then Aaron's in shock for pretty much the rest of the show until the gun comes out in the church.
And the way it just echoed over those credits. I mean, I will never forget just both of our jaws. Just, you know, everybody, I'm sure everybody had that same reaction for that. With the relationship that you all have, do you get that say in your characters a lot in the writing part of it as well? I'm sure that's one of those usual questions, like, you know.
No. What I love about working for Mike, my husband, is that there's a very clear separation of like church and state. Like at work, he's my boss, and at home, I'm the boss. So it's a nice balance. But I think he is like a living genius when it comes to writing and creating. And so I don't want a say. I want to get what he gives me, and because I have complete faith in what he creates. Like I think there's collaboration between any actor-director relationship, but certainly we don't have one that's like out of the norm because what he delivers is so beautiful and so complete. And quite possibly better than anything I could ask for.
Yeah, because that's one of those. I mean, I think, you know, as fans, we're always kind of, it's the same way with music. When you hear that two amazing songwriters cohabitating, you're like, what is that like? You know, are you just writing music all the time? You know, that's.
It's mostly us watching Dark Place with Garth Marenghi.
You know, so the music side of things, we were definitely going to get to that. In The Astronaut's Wife, you do play an opera singer. And, mm-hmm. And the actual singing, that's, did I read right? Gabrielle Reese, right? That's,
yeah,
that's a little offstage
magic.
Although,
fun fact, I did sing on the day, and I'm not a great singer. And so, like, let me paint the picture for you. I'm standing on the stage at this, like, the Brooklyn Academy of Music, which is an iconic opera house. I am in that full getup. They are playing playback. There are over 100 extras in the audience. And I am singing that aria, because I trained with Susan Graham, this amazing opera singer, for months beforehand to get the breathing down. And I sound like somebody is strangling Gilbert Godfrey. I swear to God, it was so funny. I could not handle it. So like, God bless all those extras who like went on that, background actors who went on that ride with me, because I sang every note of that aria to the best of my ability.
Well done. As you said, with the scream, I mean, letting yourself, you know, possibly get to that.
Oh,
I don't know.
The most embarrassing, the most embarrassing moment of my life. Yeah.
Well, so head back in time, because we're here, you know, I'm surrounded by all of this. What is your musical story? Like who are your coming of age artists? Like who are the ones that, you know, took you there?
Oh, so my family is like a Venn diagram of singer-songwriters and musical theater. So on one side, I have like Paul Simon and Pete Seeger and Neil Diamond and Peter, Paul and Mary and all of this like sort of hippie music from my parents. And then I have like Miss Saigon, Guys and Dolls and things like that. That's so like nothing about my music taste is cool. I was saying that this gave me a little bit of the chills because it gave me a flashback to middle school when I wore a Grateful Dead t-shirt to school and like the cool music kids pulled me aside and they were like, name three songs. And I was completely incapable of doing that. And then I went home and listened to a bunch of Grateful Dead and now I'm into it. But like, I don't have cool music taste. Like for me, I'm always more connected to the lyrics. Like I'm really, was really like a huge Ani DiFranco fan, Fiona Apple, like all that like original Riot Girl stuff, Alanis Morissette. And, but music is a huge part of my process. Like every character has a playlist. Every character.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's something you put together before, like as you're creating the character.
Mm-hmm. And like each scene has a couple of songs I like to listen to before I get to set. So like it gets me in a feel.
I'm going to be seeing Ani next week with Jenny Lewis. I think that's next week. Yeah.
I love her.
She's on it's the 25th of the clip. Let's clip the album. Like, yeah. I think that's the Living one I'm trying clip. To remember. Yeah.
Living in Clip.
Living in Clip. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's she's incredible. And
she's incredible.
And all the ones that you mentioned, I mean, I think we're around the same age anyway. I'm 40. And so that was, you know, that prime era stuff coming in right there. That's all of that. So like, I don't know if I'm putting you on the spot by asking you that, but as we're talking about specifically these two characters, you know, one from The Astronaut's Wife and one's from Midnight Mass, like what were the playlists? What were the difference in those playlists right there?
I'm going to pull them up for you right now.
Oh, not even on the spot because you've got it on hand.
I was like, I'm going on a music podcast. This is what the cool kids do. I better know. So let's see. We have got, Annette's playlist is called Annette Supernova, and that is the stuff that I did to make me feel like a diva all the time. So we have some Doja Cat, we have Midnight Train to Georgia, we have Flo Milli, we have some Cardi B, and then I have both of the arias, and then I have Jennifer Hudson's version of Memory from Cats.
Mm-hmm.
I Still Believe from Miss Saigon, Take Me or Leave Me, which is Idina Menzel from Rent. And those are the modern versions of the arias I was singing. So, because I don't speak Italian, I would listen to the modern remakes of like the La Boheme becomes Rent, right? And Madame Butterfly becomes Miss Saigon. And so I would find the updated version to get the emotional feel because I couldn't live translate the Italian. So that's Annette. And Aaron had two playlists. Aaron had Aaron Always for all the sad stuff, which is a lot of like Leonard Cohen, Ben Folds, Ani DiFranco, and Vance Joy, Brandi Carlile, Harper Simon, who is Paul mm-hmm. Simon's son. Love that.
Which Harper song?
Wishes and Stars.
Wishes and Stars. Oh, that's a good one. That's a great one.
We got Patty Griffin. We got some Counting Crows for Aaron because she's a 9-year-old girl.
Right here. Kenny Crow's right behind me there, Mr. Adam Duritz. Oh. You can't tell, but yeah.
Love. Also, he dates hot chicks every time. and then Aaron's other sad, like more like aggressive Once All the Shit Hits the Fan and the Angels Around was a lot of Kanye West, like Follow God, Wash Us in the Blood, Captain Hook by Megan Stallion, and then some like other things to pull me out of it, like BTS, Dynamite, and Blackpink doing Ice Cream, and Nicki Minaj doing Megatron. Like there's just a lot of stuff to get you hyped, you know?
Right. And I loved how that works though, because obviously we know how that works in our day-to-day, you know, you need to feel something, you go towards a song, but especially like, I'm not an actor, but I would imagine like to have to lose yourself in whatever kind of depth that you put yourself in, like to have Nicki Minaj pulling you out, like that's got to be some sort of like, you know.
Yeah. And like for me, it's like the ins and outs of it are the important part. Like I can lose myself in the character for hours, but I need to know when it's over. Like I need to know, especially with someone like Aaron, where like you feel it in your body and it's like a lot of tension and a lot of exhaustion. I need to just like just scream along with some Nicki Minaj or like just like get in there with Princess Nokia and like really remember that it's just playtime. It's not real.
Yeah. As the folks were saying, your Vecna songs now. The Stranger Things reference there.
That's yeah, so my Vecna song is Obvious Child by Paul Simon.
See, that's it. I went on a huge, like years long. So quick story. My son, when he was about to turn 9, and we're a co-parenting divorced family, it dawned on me that we could live out the lyrics to Graceland and take the trip. My traveling companion is 9 years old. He is the child of my first marriage.
Four boys, pilgrims, and families. We're all going to Graceland.
So we did the trip. Me and him, we got in the car and we played it out the entire, just so we could do that. Like Paul Simon is a guiding lights around our house. Wow. So I'm there with you on that. Yeah.
That's how I always think of my relationship with Mike as Hearts and Bones.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's like, that's the other one. And like, why don't we drive through the night, make it down to Mexico? Like all of that feeling. Why don't you love me for who I am, where I am? Oh, God. I mean, where's Paul? Paul Simon.
Where he just popped up at Newport's out of semi-retirement. He was the day before Joni Mitchell came back and it was going to be big news. And then Joni Mitchell came back and everybody forgot that Paul Simon just came out of retirement for a day.
Poor man. He's one grumpy motherfucker. I love it.
That's a hell of a song right there. That's amazing. You all deserve so many awards for these shows. I feel like the Emmys just, I don't know what's going on there, but you all should win a million of them for Midnight Mass. And I know that's really not, happening in that way right now.
I do think it's an actual crime that Hamish wasn't nominated.
It's an actual crime.
Like that I don't understand. There's no better performance this year. What he did with those homilies. It's insane. The fact that and he's playing an old man in a young man's body and a priest. It's insane. And if Hamish is nominated, why isn't Mike nominated? Like the rest of us, maybe but the Hamish and Mike of it, really, I was like, how dare you? I know I'm supposed to be cool and not care, but that one stung.
But when you have a script like this, when you have performances like this, I'm not going to try to go too off the rails because I'm with you on the passion on this. Like who didn't see this? You know, it's incredible. I say that as a compliment to all of you all. What you're doing is incredible.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And with everything else, again, the Time Traveler's Wife, I cannot wait to see what happens with the next movie. I know that's pretty hush-hush on that right now. We're talking about the Fall in the House of Usher. That's, thanks for taking the time, to talk about all of this. I love what you do.
I will give you one little hint about Usher, which is that my character's number one go-to song is Don't Bite by Doja Cat.
Okay. I'm taking that note. Now, when I watch that, that's what I'm going to be thinking.
You should. Yeah, it's right on there. You'll see.
Kate, thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you. I so appreciate this.
Thank you so much. What a great conversation, guys.
And a big O thanks to Kate Siegel, the Time Traveler's Wife, that's out now. Midnight Mass came out just last year. Looking forward to the Fall in the House of Usher as well. Big thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. Again, 3 new interviews every single week. New ones every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, or YouTube for the video versions. And after that, after you subscribe, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Facebook, Instagram, mostly Twitter, all three of them at Kyle Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition of Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Yesterday, I went to the Game of Thrones new show premiere, and it said that the carpet starts at 5:30 and the doors open at 6. So I literally get there at 5:30 because it said so right there in the email, and it's a ghost town. And people were legitimately shocked that I was there on time.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.